Welcome, everybody, to a special holiday edition of the Evil Empire Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Macarello, here on December 29th, 2022. The end of the year is in sight for the Yankees baseball. It's been their end of season for at least a couple of months now. And apologies for the delay in recording something. I kind of jinxed it earlier this year when I got sick and lost my voice for a little while. I had the same flu, COVID, whatever cocktail that was going around, and my worst symptom was I lost my voice. So once again, I think that the gods or whoever else is not a Yankee fan and is trying to silence me might be trying to say something, but they can't stop me. They could only slow me down for a little while. www.evilempiresports.com is our website. You could submit questions. You could buy merchandise, submit feedback directly to the show. Follow us on Twitter at @EEmpireSports and on Instagram and Facebook as well. Monumental news for the New York Yankees so far this offseason. Aaron Judge was re-signed to the team. Hal Steinbrenner seemingly stepping in at the 11th hour to help lead those negotiations and ask Aaron Judge, do you want to be a New York Yankee? And what's it going to take? Because we're prepared to get this done. And for the Yankees, $360 million later, they get to keep their man. Not only will Aaron Judge be patrolling right now, it looks like will be right field in the 2023 season and beyond for the next almost decade. They'll have their man be the captain officially for this Yankee team moving forward. Unofficially, Aaron Judge has been the face of the team, the face of MLB, the de facto leader of this team. Last year in particular, Anthony Rizzo, World Series champion, veteran, not too much older than Aaron Judge, but one of the senior statesmen on the team, looked like he was that guy. And it'll be interesting to me to watch this season unfold and see how much Anthony Rizzo will pass the torch, let's just say, to Aaron Judge, if Judge wasn't holding it himself already, to be that guy who leads on and off the field. I find it interesting because Derek Jeter was interviewed by Susan Waldman, and forget what some folks might say about Susan Waldman in the booth and your own thoughts about her broadcasting games. As an interviewer, a journalist that way, her roots coming up in WFAN longer than I've been alive, she's one of the best. And Derek Jeter said it very well when Susan asked him about being the Yankee captain. There's more than just one leader on the team, especially in the clubhouse, the way that veterans lead. Some lead quietly, some lead by example, some are a little bit more vocal. Some like to straighten out the old guard. Some like to take the young guys under their wing. So it's going to take all different types of folks to continue to have this Yankee clubhouse gel, as it looks like it has done successfully, especially during the 2022 season. And the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, and all that pressure, Aaron Judge is going to need capable veterans to help him in that locker room, along with Aaron Boone, to put together a winning team. That means the way they play night in and night out through the grind, through the hotter summer months. Aaron Judge is back and he's doing it officially. My take on it, I think it's something that was offered to him as a carrot. I don't think that you could sign someone to the length and the value of the contract that Aaron Judge received. And like I mentioned, the fact that he is the de facto face of baseball, has been the face of the team for basically the last 5 or 6 years, and not offer him that. For me, a lot of it's window dressing. Do I care who the captain is? This isn't high school. This is professional sports. I don't need him to wear a C on his vest or on his uniform. You know, he's not bringing out the lineup card. It's not like hockey where you need the captain because the referee is only going to speak to the captain during the game while there's line shifts and people moving around, the coaches and on the ice, and stuff like that. He's already married, so it's not going to help him get a date to prom. All that noise doesn't matter. What matters most, the theme of this show, the theme of professional sports, is going to be winning. And Derek Jeter had delivered championships before he became the captain. And Aaron Judge is the 16th captain in Yankee history, And a good number of those captains have won championships. Don Mattingly notably didn't. But Willie Randolph did. Ron Guidry did. And some of these other Yankee captains have. So I don't want this to be a story of Aaron Judge getting his payday and getting his accolades now officially from the team before he's delivered what he really should. And that's a championship. Now, with that said, Aaron Judge did basically whatever he could to will this team to a championship, shy of being completely dominant during the postseason. He had 62 home runs. He won the MVP. He carried the Yankees during a stretch that they looked pitiful. And without him, frankly, the team might have even missed the postseason. I can't fault him for doing everything that he could and playing as well as he has these last several years, even playing center field, stealing bases, playing the outfield to a Gold Glove caliber level, hitting anything that's thrown at him, reducing his strikeouts, taking his walks, letting teams pitch around him. The list goes on and on. And I think that the contract is justification of that. Now, for me as a fan, what do I want to see? I want to see a championship. And I want to see him at the forefront of it, continuing through the length of this long deal. Do I have an issue with them signing him to a long-term deal? You know, many folks have asked questions into the podcast, even in the early days of the season last year, when Aaron Judge turned down that deal or that contract from Brian Cashman on opening day. Would I sign Judge to a long-term deal? And my answer was kind of waffling at the time. You can't let him go. Do you want to have him on board and pay him 30, 40 million bucks when he's 39 or 40 years old? I definitely don't want to see that. But this offseason, this free agency signing period, particularly with the top level guys, and I know that Carlos Correa is now pending a second time due to medicals with the Mets, it's proven that these owners are moving a little bit back towards the whole, we have to pay them late in the contract for performance that they're going to deliver early in that contract. Maybe even overpay them for performance that they deliver to another team. And that's kind of the nature of the beast right now. When you let these free agents reach free agency at all different times. And sometimes if they are pre-arbitration or they haven't gotten paid much in arbitration, these players are trying to get that money back. Oftentimes from someone else who was not paying them when they were delivering the goods. So you had to pay Aaron Judge to get him back. That's kind of the weird thing about this offseason for the Yankees so far. They spent a fortune. They go out and they get Aaron Judge. And we're going to get to pitching in a moment. Guys like Carlos Rodon, guys like Tommy Canely even coming back to bolster that bullpen. When you look at the offense, the thing that was the Yankees' most inconsistent trait in 2022, the thing that really failed them down the stretch, the part of their game that completely disappeared in the postseason, leading to them being swept by the Astros, is the offense. And when you spend $300 million or $400 million, you expect that the offense is going to get better. You're going to plug some holes. You're going to upgrade some positions. And looking at the roster, looking at that lineup from 2022 and what right now it projects to look like headed into 2023, the Yankees aren't better. They're not. And that's the thing that feels bittersweet about this offseason. You couldn't lose Judge. You can't take 62 home runs out of the lineup. So you spent all that money just to keep him on a team that down the stretch last year and in the postseason didn't hit. Maybe even more concerning is the fact that going back to 30 or 31-year-old free agents, do you expect that Aaron Judge is going to hit more than 62 home runs next year? I don't. Do you expect that he's going to even reach 60 home runs next year? Again, I don't. Do you think he'll hit 40 or 50? Probably unlikely. The historic seasons come around every once in a generation. That's what makes them so significant. That's what makes them so historical. Do I expect Aaron Judge to still be an MVP caliber player or even an all-star for the next 4 or 5 years? Sure. But history tells us that players, as they get older, break down. They're more susceptible to injury. They're not going to perform at those high levels. Look at Albert Pujols, someone that got a mega deal after MVP and championship seasons in St. Louis, goes out to the Angels in Los Angeles, and at varying levels is still consistent, but undoubtedly that performance dropped off notably from his peaks in St. Louis. And granted, he could still hit 18, 20, 24 home runs, but you're not paying someone that mega deal to hit 20 homers. You're paying that somebody to hit 40, 50, 60. And is it likely they will? Is it fair to assume or hope or ask them to do that? Not really. Which is why you really want to have the Yankees have a much more complete lineup with fewer holes in it. But for all the money that they spend, they only kept their guy. And that is maybe the biggest issue with the Yankees not locking up Aaron Judge earlier, or somehow conniving him or convincing him to sign at $200-some-odd million at the start of 2022. Aaron Judge bet on himself and won, and he won big, and it costs the Yankees. But again, outside of Harrison Bader, who the Yankees did not get a full season from, picking him up at the trade deadline last year, and admitting that he was one of the few guys that hit in this postseason, the Yankees are rolling out the same players in 2023. Is Glaber going to magically put it together? No. Is Josh Donaldson going to revert to his MVP caliber offense? I don't think so. Not at 37 years old or 38 years old. The only plus that I see in the 2022 lineup moving into 2023 are twofold. Number one, Anthony Rizzo is back. And speaking of back, he's had one that acted up on him in years prior, and especially last season. So is he going to be able to handle that a year older and playing full-time at first base in 2023? Again, the odds tell us likely not. However, with the shift being banned in 2023, I think that that batting average will come up a little bit. And I think that he's going to be even more productive and not have to do the all or nothing swing for the fences type approach that he's moved towards in the last few seasons. So I think that that's a plus sign for the Yankees. The second thing is left field. Who is that going to be? It can't possibly be Aaron Hicks. But right now, as an outfielder, he's probably your most accomplished option. You could move Oswaldo Cabrera out there, and as an infielder by trade in his young career, he did very well, I would say. Yeah, let's give him that. He did very well, and he had some iffy moments, but again, this is a converted infielder. Do you want him to be your everyday outfielder? All right, I'll take it. Does he give you much better offensive performance than Aaron Hicks? In a small sample size, not yet. Josh Donaldson, still your third baseman, still can't hit. Jose Trevino, an all-star, wins the Platinum Glove, fantastic defensively, really can't hit. And at shortstop, sure, Brian Cashman is saying that we're going to give Oswald Peraza, we're going to give these guys a chance, or even Volpe, we're going to give these guys a chance to win the opening day lineup spot. We're going to give them a chance. There's going to be a competition in spring training. That, to me, is lip service. Because they could still send Anthony Volpe down and suppress his service time. And we won't get a fair shot at it because the Yankees want to keep an extra year or two of control. And if he was that good last year, if Peraza was brought up, Cashman or Boone or somebody, as I said many times last year, they would have let him play. Why bring him up to have him languish on the bench if he wasn't the option that the Yankees could rely on to drive in runs, to put the bat on the ball, to not have these feeble offensive outputs for night in and night out leading into the most vital part of the season? He would have been in the lineup. So he's only going to get better, you hope, but you don't know. That's when you hear Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is going to be your starting shortstop, and Josh Donaldson is our starting third baseman, and we'll let the young guys compete. As a Yankee fan, you have to really scratch your head. I'm worried about what this offense is going to look like, because the other thing that the Yankees have done is put even more pressure on these prospects to come up and deliver. They turned down the sure thing, And that's not to say that they weren't going to get their man or their men multiple during the trade deadline, because there's no guarantee that a team is going to take what the Yankees will offer and send back these stud guys. But not signing Trey Turner, not signing Carlos Correa, not going after Dansby Swanson, not going after even these tier two guys, the Yankees are telling you these prospects are the real deal, because it's not the trade deadline. Free agency is basically just what number are you going to write down on a check that the other guy is going to take and want to play in New York. There's no other obstacle. There's no obstacle for them, just like there's no obstacle for the Mets with Steve Cohen to go out and get essentially whoever the hell they want. The Mets locked up one of their stud outfielders in Brandon Nimmo that the Yankees really could have used. What's going to happen when these young guys don't hit? What's going to happen when these young guys crumble under pressure? Or they've already maxed out? Volpe's the next Michael A. Taylor. Incredible speed, can't hit, can't get on base to use it. What is that going to mean for the Yankees? It's going to mean that they put all their eggs in one basket with these guys, and it didn't work out. Now, look, there's plenty of people online that have been saying, all you folks that complain that George Steinbrenner bought championships and traded away prospects, and that's why the Yankees went through these periods of ineptitude, and they languished because all they could do was buy has-beens and washed-up guys, and they didn't have any of their own young people. There's a balance to that. I don't have the exact answer, but I'm not the owner or the GM of this team. I think if Volpe and Peraza and Cabrera are your answers and they are your young studs, then God bless America. I'll be thrilled when they perform well. And not everybody's going to be Mike Trout, but if they are meaningful contributors to the team and they are meaningful contributors on a winning team, then I have to be happy with that. I have to be satisfied with that. But the Yankees didn't just turn down ho-hum guys and say, we'll see what Cabrera could do. We'll see what Peraza could do. We'll see what Volpe could do. They spurned some of the best players that do not often come to free agency without being locked up. In the case of Carlos Correa, coming up to free agency twice now in as many years. They're turning down studs. And they're turning down studs and saying, I've got better at home. You know the memes when you go out and you say, hey, I want to have some ice cream. And mom says, we've got ice cream at home. And they show the picture, ice cream at home. And it's like a melted scoop of, you know, sour briars or something like that. That's what the Yankees have to hope they don't have. Because they turned down a chance to dance with the prom queen. And we hope that their girlfriend that they've got is worth it. And it's that simple. I don't think that it's going to be the normal progression for prospects to get a chance to come up. You've heard about them, like when Judge came up, like when Gary Sanchez came up. I think you've got to link the name Volpe and the name Peraza to Trey Turner and Carlos Correa. You have to, because the Yankees didn't even look at those guys in the offseason. If they did, we didn't hear a lick about it. And the Yankees, whether it's true or not, are attached to basically every free agent. That's how the agents for these guys drive up the asking price. Oh, the Yankees might be bidding. They're opening up the checkbook. Not even a whisper on some of those guys. And Cashman has said it himself. Hal Steinbrenner said it himself. These are our guys. They're going to have every chance to win the job. So if they're ready, why do they have to win the job? It would kind of be a no-brainer. You could hit better than Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. You could hit better than Josh Donaldson. You could hit better than Gleyber Torres. That's the thing that's making me kind of uneasy in all this. All right, it's great. They're going to get a chance to compete. They can't beat IKF. These are can't-miss guys. I guess they're not so can't-miss, if that's still even a question. Or is this all just coach and GM speech that you don't want to give a 20-year-old guy, a 21-year-old kid, the keys to the kingdom, the keys to shortstop for the New York Yankees? That I could understand. Go out and earn it, meat. All right, sure. But I'd like to have a little bit more confidence that the Yankees will be upgrading those positions headed into this season. Because again, right now on paper, outside of a full year of Harrison Bader hitting better than Aaron Judge, when he was playing center field, not going to happen. hitting better than Aaron Hicks when he was in center field a possibility. But the tape on him is not that he's a bat, it's that he's a fantastic defender. Now, preventing runs is something that the Yankees did in 2022 proficiently. They've still got Gerrit Cole. They've still got Nestor Cortez, who I expect regression from, having thrown 200 innings or whatever it was, the most in his career. You can't expect that he's going to do that again. You go for these YOLO options. You play lotto and you win. You get struck by lightning. It's so unlikely, it's likely not going to happen again. Far more even unlikely that it's going to happen again. But he's back. Luis Severino back. You expect that he's going to give you a full season and not enter with an offseason where he's rehabbing from a major injury. Frankie Montas, who at the trade deadline last year you thought was going to be the second best option to get, who was the number one option or who was the most desired pitcher that the Yankees were not able to get in the trade deadline last year, but do pick up as a free agent headed into 2023, Carlos Rodon. They have him. So the starting pitching, that rotation has been bolstered. And if you roll out a front line of Cole, Severino, Cortez, Rodon, and Montas, I love that. And Domingo Herman, who all he's done has shoved for you, leave aside some of his behavior issues that I've already talked about, you got a lot of good pitchers. And the Yankees have always had a good bullpen. They continue to bolster that. No more Aroldis Chapman with his antics. Tommy Kahnle comes back. Michael King, hopefully healthy in time to pitch early, if not for the entire 2023 season at the back end of that bullpen. This team is going to suppress a lot of runs. But remember, suppressing runs was never the issue with this team. And the Yankees continue to pour a deeper and stronger foundation on that side of the game, on defense and in pitching. And that travels well, and that travels well in the postseason. You can't give me an offense that relies heavily on Josh Donaldson, IKF, Gleyber Torres, even DJ LeMahieu, and whoever they're going to roll out in left field, and Jose Trevino, and tell me that this is a murderer's row on offense. Giancarlo Stanton, if he could come back and deliver without the end of season slump, I'd feel a lot better about it. DJ LeMahieu is already on the other side of 32. And he showed you with a toe injury that it's taken essentially 2 months to figure out if he'd even need surgery or not to correct. Coming back and hitting as well as we know he can at a silver slugger level. Again, I don't bet on those things happening. There's still 3 months, 4 months until spring training, and a lot could happen between now and then. It's likely going to happen on the trade market. Is it Reynolds from the Pirates, who they say is looking more for pitching prospects that honestly the Yankees don't have because most of their pitching is developed and frankly traded for or signed through free agency over the last couple of years, so they don't have those same prospects to go out and deliver. If they did, they're blocked and that makes them expendable, but most of the Yankees' depth with prime prospects, like we talked about earlier, are on offense. And it doesn't sound like the Pirates are interested in that. You go out and get McCarthy from Arizona. I think that that would be a great name to add in the outfield. Somebody that could hit. But again, what is it going to take to pry those players away? By way of the aforementioned, can't miss universal once-in-a-lifetime prospects. Said it a few times. I've heard about enough Yankee prospects. They don't pan out. Judge, then you go back. Who before then? Posada? It's a long time ago. Now, speaking of this free agency period, and I mentioned guys like Brandon Nimmo with the Mets, Justin Verlander going to the Mets, Carlos Correa being offered a mega deal by the Mets after his failed physical with the San Francisco Giants. Correa's physical is creating issues with this Mets deal. But the point is that Steve Cohen wants to spend. And Nick submits a question to say, are the Mets the new Yankees? Is Steve Cohen the new George Steinbrenner? I don't know if he is the new one yet. I think that the major difference, or let's just say shift to answering that question with a yes, will be if and when the Mets win a championship. Because if they win a championship, then a lot of people that point to say These teams from the big markets spend a fortune and they buy their championships. They buy their trophies. Then that criticism will come true. And then all the talk about payroll and luxury tax and salary caps or salary floors can start with that. The team that spent the most and bought the most players wins. I think over the last, is it 22 years? I think that that's the number. I can go back and look, but I'm going to go with it. I think over the last 22 baseball seasons, only twice has a team with the highest payroll won a championship. One of them was the Red Sox. Was it 2017? And then the other one might have been the Dodgers during the COVID season. Those are the only two times, I believe, that a team with the highest payroll has actually won a championship. Those are pretty low as far as the number of teams that have won by spending the most. I have long said that just throwing money at players doesn't mean that you're going to have the best team. You could pay shit players or hurt players or players past their prime a lot of money. They don't magically hit better because their paycheck is larger. You have to spend smartly. You have to target the right free agents. You have to target those guys that are going to mesh well with your clubhouse. Guys that your analytics or your coaching staff are saying are going to be productive, or you're going to be able to find the diamond in the rough. All of those different things together. Otherwise, sure, the Yankees would win every year, or the team that spent the most would win every year. What I think that the Mets' behavior is indicative of are two things. So the first one, I'm going to go back to Susan Wallman, who made a great point again during the Judge press conferences when they announced his contract signing and becoming the captain of the Yankees. And that is that having the most money or spending the most money doesn't help you get all of the free agents that you need to win a championship. You've got to have a really well-developed core and a pretty solid foundation where you are plugging. And granted, you're going to plug it with stud players, but you've only got a few holes to get over that hump and win a championship. Where having the money helps most is in keeping your own players. That's a great distinction. Rather than going out and getting top flight guys across the board, no team can afford that. Maybe Steve Cohen will do that, but historically, teams have been only able to add one or two, or in the case of the 2009 championship Yankees, if you want to call it three stud free agents, and get to a championship. The Yankees in that offseason added CeCe Sabathia, stud, Mark Teixeira in the days before the shift was really in vogue, stud, and AJ Burnett. Sometimes a stud, sometimes a dud. But three clear, strong contributors to a World Series title. Most of the time, if you look at guys on the Pirates, if you look at guys on the Royals, if you look at guys on even the Washington Nationals in recent years, where they're talking about maybe selling the franchise. When money constraint is an issue, when you finally do draft and develop and promote these young stud players, they go to free agency, and they're not signing there. Oakland's not keeping the Mark Mulders and the Barry Zitos and the Eric Chavez's of the world, or the Jason Giambis of the world. I mean, watch Moneyball or read the book, and it's just lamentation to say, oh, we can't afford these guys. We can't keep them. We could definitely draft them, and we could find them, but there's just no way. There is a way. And it's the same way that Steve Cohen or Hal Steinbrenner or any of these other owners get players. You write the check. Is Oakland and their dilapidated stadium generating as much money as the New York Yankees? No. Are the Pittsburgh Pirates generating as much revenue as the New York Yankees? Well, compared to Oakland, they've got a better stadium. They arguably have a better fan base. But until these teams open up their books, which outside of the Atlanta Braves being part of a larger organization that is publicly traded and has to let that information be known, we don't know what these teams are making or losing. But I could tell you this, these owners of MLB teams would not be invested for the time and money they have to be in these enterprises if they were failing. if they were losing money, because the great majority of them made their money somewhere else and got involved in these teams. Or they inherited these franchises from family members up the line, where if you're looking to turn an investment of, say, millions of dollars, if you're the Steinbrenner family, into the multi-billion dollar franchise that it is now, you'd probably be more willing to cash out than, say, float bonds to build a new stadium across the street from the old Yankee Stadium and live up with that headache and financial hardship. The owners are getting paid. You can't talk about limiting the spending of a group of owners who, with that spending, are funding the activity of other teams via the luxury tax, and not address the biggest issue, which is the owners of all of these teams doing a disservice to their cities and their fan bases by not putting any money into it. Sure, you pay $40 to park, you buy a $12 beer and a $20 chicken bucket to go to a Yankee game, and you're spending $200 if you want to sit in the front row in any section, or you're spending $1,300 if you want to sit in the luxury box seats. Is there any doubt that the Steinbrenners are willing to spend that money? They have either the highest or a top five payroll for the last 30, 40 years since free agency began. You can't say that about the Oakland Athletics. You can't say that about the Colorado Rockies. You can't say that about the Washington Nationals. You can't say that about the Pittsburgh Pirates. You can't say that about the Baltimore Orioles. You can't say that about a lot of these teams. So what are they doing with the money? They're putting it in their pockets. Now, do I fault them? No, I don't. Because if this was not the Evil Empire Sports Podcast, and this was the Evil Empire Business Podcast, I would say you need to do what's most healthy for the business and keeps the money in your pocket. And as an owner, if you could roll out a $70 million payroll team and still turn a profit, and put hundreds of millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars, we don't know, into your pocket, then I would do it. Why mess with that? As a business owner, thinking about teams like the Miami Marlins, who win a championship twice and then have a fire sale for their team so that they don't have to pay anybody. Build new stadiums with taxpayer money and don't have to pay players. I think that's one of the reasons why Derek Jeter left, because he kept trying to get this ownership group to spend what it would take to win, and his love of winning didn't align with the ownership's group love of money. So until you can somehow compel or force these teams to spend money, you cannot go after a guy like Steve Cohen, who has so much more money than every other owner that he's going to spend $380 million or something similar to that on 2023 payroll, plus $111 million in luxury tax penalties that's going to go in the pockets of the other owners. If I'm Steve Cohen, I say, you got some balls to take my $111 million, which you're going to use to run your franchise and pay your players that you otherwise wouldn't have, and use that to criticize me. If MLB didn't have a luxury tax for these franchises that do know how to turn a profit, that do know how to generate revenue, that will invest in a team, guys like Cohen, who was a fan of the Mets for years and wants the team to win and not be a pathetic small market team in the biggest market in the country, if you weren't going to collect a luxury tax from those guys and give it to the small fish, then you might have a leg to stand on, because there would be no equality, there would be no justice, there would be no recompense. But as long as you keep taking money from those owners above and beyond what they're spending on their own team and using that money to give to the small guys, you need to know your role and shut your mouth. Because Steve Cohen with the luxury tax is going to spend close to $1 billion in 1 year just on this 2023 Mets team. Why I think it's even more imperative than in 2022 for them to not only make the postseason, but make a deep run and challenge for a world championship. I think that they've got the team to do it as well. It all starts with that. You can put a cap on all of these teams. It's not going to be much lower than whatever the top line rate is before you get into the salary tax or luxury tax penalties like it's been the last couple of years. What is that number? 250 something million? The MLB Players Association is not going to let you go much lower than that as a cap. Because now, with deals that are already laid out there and a huge 2022 into 2023 free agency offseason, you're going to really handicap those teams too much. Those deals were given out, understanding what the penalties were, and there also was no hard cap in place. So let's say, just for shits and giggles, you put a salary cap of $250 million on all teams. And it's like the NFL. It is hard and fast. You cannot go above it. That's why when they cut down the rosters during the offseason in football, it's very interesting. Sometimes these big name guys, sometimes these guys that still have a lot of tread on their tires are let go because it's a money game. It's a numbers game. You can't operate. There's no way around it. So they put that $250 million hard cap in place. What is that going to mean for the Oakland A's? Are they going to be more competitive? What does that mean for the Miami Marlins? Are they going to be more competitive? No, because putting a speed limit on it that high, is it going to make them run any faster? It's what they're going to be able to commit to that race to have their team have an equitable shot. And until these cheapskate owners pony up the money, a salary cap for me is a non-starter. And I know the players will never go for it. And we all know that the players and the owners don't get along anyway. And we're just a snap of the fingers or the flip of the calendar from one year to the next as you get closer to that last collective bargaining agreement before there's another walkout or a lockout. And that's the thing. The ownership group is supposed to approve these guys coming on board. And you heard among some of the owners after Steve Cohen bought the Mets saying, we are a little bit worried about what this is going to mean for the future of the sport. His pockets are much deeper than ours. His coffers are much larger. He's going to be able to outspend to a degree that the sport has never seen before. I think that we're starting to see the early onset of that in this 2022-23 offseason. But the owners are the one that are supposed to keep the integrity of the game and the integrity of the sport and the health of the business in check. And the commissioner is an employee of the owners. He's not just some independent sports czar looking out for the best thing for baseball. Rob Manfred is looking out for the best thing for the owners. And if they don't like him, they'll find another guy who will be a fan of the owners. And if the majority of the owners don't want to spend money, they're not going to put into place a set of rules that's going to force them or compel them to spend more money. And at the same time, as long as they keep accepting money from the Cohens and the Steinbrenners of the world, they can't put too many restrictions on them because that's a source of income for them. New salary cap, $250 million or $300 million, whatever that number is, that $111 million check just from the Mets alone goes away. So that's $111 million that the A's or the Tampa Rays with their shit stadiums and their terrible fan bases and their god-awful non-competitive teams won't have. So all this talk about the worry of the sport, you know, am I worried about Cohen? I love it because right now with the limitations that are in place, they're only financial. They're not rule-based. They won't stop a player from being signed or limit a team from going out and spending as much money as they do in, say, the NFL or even in F1 where you got to be worried about, am I going to be able to fuel up the car this week because of the expenditure cap that's hard and fast across all teams equally. Because even there, if you want to stretch this a little bit, to look for a corollary, there are teams that don't have the budgets of those big money teams, like Ferrari and Mercedes and even Red Bull. And why teams like Haas, if you're looking at them, if you've ever watched Drive to Survive on Netflix, why their teams, even from the very first episode, they're showing they got, 200 guys or 50 guys or whatever it is. And then you look over at the Mercedes garage or the Ferrari garage and they've got hundreds and thousands of people. And that's the reason why they don't compete, because a cap is not going to put money in your pocket. The way that the luxury tax works now, it's going to take money out of those teams' pockets. Am I worried about it as a Yankee fan? Not really. The Yankees and the Mets will play each other for interleague, but during the course of the season, it's not really going to impact the Yankees too much. They weren't going after Verlander. If anything, he got taken out of the American League. He's not playing on the Astros. So that's another guy the Yankees aren't going to have to worry about until maybe the World Series if they get that far. But I think it shakes up the sport, and I think it shakes it up in a good way. That's really good news. I love that there's buzz around New York for baseball. I love when the Mets are good because that makes the rivalry, although it's not one that's played out on the field, it's usually one that's played out on the back page. It's one that's played out in the standings, and you could look across town at what the Mets are doing. And that, to me, has been the Yankee rival. Even more so than the Red Sox, as much as it was during those early 2000s periods. And, 2007, 2008, and around there. So that's good for me as a baseball fan. I think that it is good for baseball, for a big market team to have an owner that's willing to spend. That there's somebody who's investing in the sport and the team saying, I want my money to go into it. I'm not going into this scared. I'm not going into this to try to bilk taxpayers out of money and take money from fans who buy tickets and buy jerseys and buy hot dogs and not put it back into the very thing that they paid to go and watch. That's healthy for the sport. Owners that can't afford to stay in cities and have to move, owners that can't afford to pay MLB players and the top players what their salary in the market will bear, that's terrible for the sport. You should have contraction if there aren't enough owners to pay for what the sport needs to be at the top of its game. And as baseball slips to be the least popular, or maybe next to football and basketball, the least popular major sport in the U.S., that's something that they can't afford, especially after lockouts and strikes and having missed seasons and world championships and things like that going back to the 90s. That cannot happen. The sport can't survive that. So for the Yankees, they got one Christmas present, maybe Hanukkah present if you want to look earlier in December, and Aaron Judge coming back. Is it a big victory for the team? Well, it sucks that they had to spend so much time and money and stress and worry to get back the player that they had all along. And will he get back to the same levels in 2023 as he did in 2022? That remains to be seen. Just like any other moves that Brian Cashman and the rest of the Yankees front office may make, and in my opinion will have to make, to field a more competitive team in 2023, because certainly the way they ended this season wasn't the way any of us would have wanted to as fans. And I wish the same for you guys as we exit 2022. And looking ahead to the new year, hoping that you guys have a much better season as well. And for everyone out there, I'm Rob Macarello. This is the Evil Empire Sports Podcast, and we will see you in the new year. Let's go, Yankees.